Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
Truth in Broadcasting, except that it's not Tom Hartman.
It's me, Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom. We mean truth in a broad, significant kind of way, that the little stuff is you know, less consequential. Laura Flanders here, sitting in for Tom Hartman while he cruises. He must be getting sad by now. The margaritas are warming up, the food is cooling down, the dancing is getting tired. A week on ship can really do you in. He's going to need recuperation when he comes back next week, and I hope you're ready to show it to him. Our number, as always, is 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. We've got a great lineup, a great Friday lineup. We're going to be hearing in hour two from Clara Jeffrey of Mother Jones about a whole new package the magazine's put together about the war on torture coming home and just what that looks like when torture hits home. We'll hear from Clara Jeffries about the cost to us, we the people, the families here, of what we're training people to do elsewhere and the drama and crisis and trauma people are coming back with from these ridiculous deployments. Clara Jeffrey will be with us in our hour two. In hour three, great stuff. We're going to hear from Brett Morgan, who's the writer-director of a new film, Chicago 10. It's a kind of animated return to 68, an attempt to bring the current generation a new version of the story of the Chicago conspiracy trial. What happened at the Democratic Convention that year and the trial, the extraordinary trial with Abbie Hoffman and Bill Kunstler and all the rest just facing off in front of the courts there in Chicago in 68. We will hear from Brett Morgan in hour three. We'll also hear from Patrick Coburn, who's been reporting. He deserves every award in the book, and I don't just say that because he's my uncle. He's an extraordinary reporter, has been covering Afghanistan and Iraq. He wrote two important pieces that ran in the British Independent, his employer, and at counterpunch.org this week. Al-Qaeda resumes attacks, Turks invade, and Iraq falls apart. It's not a headline you're going to read in the New York Times or the LA Times or even the San Francisco Chronicle for that matter, but it's the headline of his most recent piece authored yesterday, Iraq Falls Apart. It begins, Iraq is disintegrating faster than ever. Don't you think that should be news? Patrick will join us in hour three. Again, the number is 866-303-2270. In this hour, my question to you, Ralph Nader, I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but Ralph Nader once again is leading the way. What did he do? Well, he has announced already his vice presidential pick, his running mate. And who did he pick? He picked former San Francisco supervisor and board president, the guy who almost got elected to mayor of San Francisco, Matt Gonzalez. Now, Matt Gonzalez is an important and significant character for Ralph to pick. Why? Well, for two reasons. One, Gonzalez, back in 2003, when he ran for mayor, ran exactly the kind of people-powered, movement-building campaign that the Democrats have been learning from ever since. He nearly beat Gavin Newsom, his opponent and the guy who had the backing of the Democratic establishment, including the Democratic Leadership Council. Even though he has become a kind of progressive poster child, he at that point was the establishment pick. Matt Gonzalez's run was so strong that Newsom had to reconfigure himself, more or less, after the election. And whereas Matt had been the one fashioning his campaign as the Progressive People campaign and standing strong on things like gay marriage, after Newsom's victory, Newsom, to his credit, started kind of reconfiguring his own stand and lending his support forthrightly in the first few weeks after his election to, for example, gay marriage, the issue that has made him too hot to handle for most of the leading Democrats since. John Kerry wouldn't even campaign with him. I heard that Barack Obama wanted no pictures taken of himself with Newsom. Now, that's secondhand, but from somebody who was there. Ralph Nader's picked Matt Gonzalez as his running mate. I'd love to hear from you what you think about that. What does it mean that a movement builder, a people power organizer, Matt Gonzalez, switched from Democrat to Green and is now running with Ralph Nader? It made sense, perhaps, to switch to Green 6 years ago. Does it make as much sense today? What do you think? Some in the liberal blogosphere are saying everything's changed about the Democratic Party. Now it's a people-powered institution. I'm not sure. In fact, I'm sure it's not. Not yet. But I'd love your take. I'd also love your ideas of who the vice presidential pick should be for the ultimate Democratic nominee. And you can give me your suggestions if it's Hillary Clinton or if it's Barack Obama. I'd be curious to know. Chris Bowers was talking about this yesterday on the openleft.com site, and he made some good suggestions. I'd love your take. 866-303-2270. Let's not leave it to the DLC to pick who should be the running mate of the presidential contender, the Democrat running for the presidency. You know what they'll do. They will consider the weaknesses of the candidates, and we'll have, if it's Barack Obama left to their own devices, I suspect the Democratic establishment would think that Barack should have somebody who maybe supported the war, somebody with a long record in the Senate, somebody who's a good old white guy. I don't think we should leave it at that. I think before those types of candidates, the Lieberman type of candidates, start getting proposed and pushed on the Democratic nominee, there needs to be an enormous bellowing chorus from the left saying, no, we want to shore up the credentials that are igniting a movement upsurge around, for example, Barack Obama. So we would want an anti-war candidate, somebody who was anti-war from the very beginning. We would want somebody who actually consolidates the image of change, not detracts from it in that balancing, triangulating kind of way. Not some good old white guy, endless years in the Senate. Somebody who is an expression of change, of newness. Who would it be in your view? On the demographic thing, do we really think that the running mate of Barack Obama needs ipso facto by necessity to be a white guy? And the same for Hillary Clinton. Who would you balance her candidacy with, if candidate she be? I'd love your take. 866-303-2270 is the number to call. Other news to discuss. You've got the Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz putting a figure on the cost of the war. George W. Bush says the war might be good for the economy. He says it might be, you know, good for jobs, for the war to be, the war machine to be purchasing and manufacturing weapons to kill. Good, he says. What do you say? He says what's got the economy in trouble is building too many houses. Do you think he's right? And do you want to know the stats? Well, remember what George W. Bush said the war would cost? $2 billion with a B dollars? $2 billion with a B? After the break, I'll tell you what Joseph Stiglitz says it will cost, and it has nothing to do with a B. 866-303-2270. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Tom Hartman Show. I'm Laura Flanders. I'm taking your calls. It's Fridays.
The Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
How much would you pay to have a fresh, blistering expose of the frauds, follies, and felonies of George W. Bush and Company delivered to your mailbox every week? You say you'd pay nothing? Well, that's perfect, because that's our offer exactly. The Nation magazine will send you 4 weeks of America's hottest, widest read journal of opinion absolutely free. Nobody, not Murdoch, not Time Warner, nobody owns The Nation, so nobody stops The Nation from printing the truth. Go to readthenation.com or call 800-999-6863 and accept 4 issues free. After 4 weeks, you can bail out. Just write cancel on our invoice, but I predict you'll be addicted. And delighted to sign up for 24 weeks at $13.95. That's just 58 cents a week. The Nation, risk-free at readthenation.com or call 800-999-6863. Readthenation.com or call 800-999-6863 and accept 4 issues free. The Nation.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
As you're going about your day, your old drafty windows and doors are throwing your money right out the window. The solution is new energy-efficient Milgard products installed by the experts at Henderson & Daughter. You'll make your home more comfortable year-round, save money on your energy bills, and add value to one of your biggest investments, your home. Call Henderson & Daughter today. In Portland, call 503-284-4467. In Vancouver, call 360-573-7402. Henderson & Daughter, CCB number 68623.
If you're ever in Columbus, Georgia, be sure to see the Lunchbox Museum there. Collectors love this place like Elvis fans love Graceland. Now, if you're more into Pez dispensers, stop by the Museum of Pez Memorabilia in Burlingame, California. Or, heck, stay close to home and see America's largest antiques and collectibles show this weekend, where you can not only look at all kinds of collectibles, you can buy them. Collectors may love different kinds of things, but they all love the thrill of the hunt, especially at America's largest antiques and collectibles show at the Expo Center. 1,400 booths filled with everything you can imagine, from fine antiques like estate jewelry, glass, sterling, furniture, to cool collectibles, sports and pop culture stuff, art deco, all kinds of unique things to decorate your home or workspace. If it's old and collectible, it's here. Find it, buy it, add it to your collection. Need an appraisal? Talk to the experts for just $4 an item. America's largest antiques and collectibles show this weekend at the Expo Center.
Hey, Guy Fieri here. As host of Food Network's Ultimate Recipe Showdown, I see real home cooks battling out every week. Now at Fridays, you can taste dishes inspired by the winning recipes on the Ultimate Recipe Showdown menu, starting at just $8.99. Like Peruvian herb-roasted chicken and ahi tuna ciabatta burgers. Man, they've got it all. Spiciness, juiciness, big flavors. It's the Ultimate Recipe Showdown menu at Fridays, starting at $8.99. Give me more Fridays.
Prices and participation may vary. Limited time only.
Wow, great tan.
Thanks. I'm using that new Jergens Natural Glow Express Moisturizer that gives you amazing color in only 3 days. So if I have, say, a soiree on Saturday, I start on Thursday.
Right.
Or if I want to look like I sailed in from St. Thomas by Friday, I start using it on Wednesday. You know, 3 days. Wednesday, Thursday, got it.
New Jergens Natural Glow Express Body Moisturizer starts working in just 1 day and in 3 gives natural looking color. For more information, visit 3daystoglow.com. Jergens, put your best skin out there.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And I think it's very important that when we talk about presidential politics, that we simply acknowledge that our democracy is in crisis. Of the last 100 years, if you look at the presidential races, of the last 24 of them, a full third of those contests have been won by a candidate that did not have 50% of the vote.
That was Matt Gonzalez, former president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, now running on Ralph Nader's ticket as vice presidential candidate. I'm asking you who you would pick as a vice presidential running mate for a Democratic contender in 08. I'd like to hear your picks if you think it's going to be Hillary, if you think it's going to be Obama. And take a look at what Matt Gonzalez has to say. The only place I've seen it so far is at counterpunch.org. He lays out the reasons why he is not, for example, backing Barack Obama, although he says he's enthusiastic about the mobilization around Obama. That's how I feel. But he lays it out there. Obama's votes that are discouraging him from hopping on board what he calls the Obama craze. I would like your take. 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Let's take first caller, Carl Anna. Carl Anna in Pittsburgh. Hey, Carl Anna.
Hi, my nomination is for Senator Jim Webb.
Now, that's to run with Obama or Hillary or either one?
Either one, from the southern state of Virginia. He was Secretary of the Navy, and he outranks John McCain. And in the military, rank is very important. And Jim Webb was Secretary of the Navy, so he would outrank John McCain. And he has led the anti-Iraq campaign within the Senate. He has a son that's in Iraq, and he was so angry at Bush, he wouldn't even shake his hand when he first got elected as senator and was, you know, they'll go to the White House.
No, that's right. And didn't President Bush say something ridiculous about how's your son or something?
Right, right.
Tried to be all chummy.
Right. So I think Jim Webb would be great, whether it's Clinton or Obama.
All right. Well, I think you're right. I think Jim Webb has a lot going for him. He's in a state that could go blue this election. He was against the war to begin. He hasn't been so long in the Senate that he has some trip-upable record. But where does he stand on issues outside of the war, Carlana?
Well, you know, I don't care. I think that the Iraq war...
Well, at least you're honest. All right.
The Iraq war is costing so many dollars that any domestic positions you may have, it doesn't matter because all the money is going to Iraq.
All right.
So
we'll take
until
it
we get out of Iraq.
I'll take it at that, and I thank you for your call. Carl Anna's pitch there for Jim Webb. You want to know what that number is? The number on the war? The number that George Bush says is nothing but good. $3 trillion. According to the Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, in a new book co-authored with Harvard University professor Linda Bilmes, or Bilmes, the $3 trillion war, it's right there in the headline, $3 trillion. That's the cost to this country of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're not even talking about the cost to the countries in question. And this is just plain old cost. This isn't human cost. This isn't cost of health care. This isn't cost of, psychological damage. Or rather, it is. In fact, I take it all back. Now I'm looking at the details. It does include a calculation for cost of health care and counseling. But when you include those things, the number rises to $5 trillion or $7 trillion. So the $3 trillion is just basic, as I said, basic actual spent to date and anticipated costs, equipment, you name it. Add veterans costs, healthcare and counseling, we could be looking at $7 trillion. Talk about lying to the American people. Can you tell the difference between $2 billion and $7 trillion? Len's on the line in New York City with a suggestion for a VP pick. Len, welcome to the program.
Hi. You know, my wife thinks I'm in love with Randy Rhoads, but I haven't told her that you're the sexiest woman on radio.
How do you know?
I've seen your picture. I've seen it. And your voice. I always fell for English voice. I think I told you that once before.
Go for it, Len. Let's try to refocus now.
I'm already thinking that Hillary's gone. So Obama's best choice would be Biden. There's no question about it.
And lay out your case. Make your case.
The simple fact is there's nobody who can discuss and argue what's going on in foreign policy better than him. And, you know, apart from being somewhat of a tutor, he'd be able to actually debate anybody anywhere. And, and like you said, I mean, he needs someone lily white.
I didn't say that. I said, did he need?
No, you didn't say. You were asking. But he absolutely needs someone lily white.
All right, well, this is a six-term, let's get clear. He's a six-term senator, the sixth longest serving in the Senate. He, longtime
only
Democrat
one, only one
from
or two,
Delaware.
Only one, only one or two crummy votes in the last 6 years, and probably the only reason he voted for that for the credit card bankruptcy bill is because half the credit cards payments get mailed to his home state of Delaware. Mm-hmm. Other than that, he's been a champion for women's rights, for civil rights, for fairness in all kinds of education. He puts through the crime bill. He would make such a judge. He was my first pick for president because there's just nobody who can really debate him.
Well, you're right. I mean, he was one of the co-authors of the Violence Against Women Act, which was an important piece of legislation that we forget about. One of the first things the Bush administration tried to eviscerate when they came into office. He has a good record with women, so he might have a chance of picking up some of those who have been backing Hillary Clinton. He's got a long record combating domestic violence, amongst other things. He's on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the Judiciary Committee. You're right, does he conform, does he confirm and consolidate the image of change? Does he consolidate the image of newness?
He definitely fills in the question of competence. The image of change is going to be Barack's, but the question of competence, and I think that it's going to be somewhat irrelevant. The women's vote, I think more and more people learn that John McCain has like one of the worst records from the Children's Defense Fund, and learn how hot tempered he is. He won't have a chance.
Well, I don't know about that. We said that last fall, and look where he is now. There's a lot to be said on this subject.
He was just the best of the world.
All right. I'll take it, Len. We'll got it out there. We've got Jim Webb and Joe Biden. We'll take more of your calls after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Tom Hartman Show. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in. This is Air America Radio. Don't go away.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
A Bleeding Heart Independent. Tom Hartman, nationwide on AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I don't think we're headed to recession, but no question we're in a slowdown, and that's why we acted, and acted strongly.
We're in a slowdown. I mean, really, they make fun of Barack Obama's wishy-washy wavering between preconditions and preparations, and what the hell difference might that make? And then there's a president who's saying it's not a recession, it's just a slowdown. This guy is not only wavering, he is in utter denial. Of course, the word recession has very significant implications, but still. We're going to talk about all this and more. We've got a lot of questions on the table. Who would you pick as the vice presidential running mate for the Democratic contender this year? Ralph Nader's picked Matt Gonzalez of San Francisco. He nearly beat Gavin Newsom back in 2003, running for mayor there. This is a guy who believes in people power and movement building, but he jumped party from the Democrats to the Greens. There are those in the liberal blogosphere these days who say, look, the Democratic Party's changed. It's a people-powered place right now. Do you agree? 866-303-2270. What kind of a pick would you make if it was a Barack Obama presidential candidacy? What kind of a pick if it was Hillary Clinton? Would you consolidate the message in the case of Obama of change and anti-warness and youth? Would you consolidate the image of the party, not of the establishment, or would you desperately try to balance an Obama ticket with somebody who had the gravitas of a good old white guy? 866-303-2270. It's shorthand. Don't get offended. You know what I mean. Meanwhile, the news from Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, is that the war that was supposed to cost less than $2 billion, that was what George W. Bush's administration told us in March 2003, is now costing in Afghanistan and Iraq more than $3 trillion. I don't even know how many zeros that is, but I know one of you will tell me. And if you add in psychological care, health care long-term for the vets and their families, we'll hear about that in hour two, it could be as high as $7 trillion. Do I hear 10? Well, writing about all of these subjects and more, one of my favorite regular reporters at the website alternate.org, Josh Holland, is with us on the line. Josh writes brilliantly, I think, about a huge array of topics. So who better to kick off our conversation here on the Tom Hartman Show? Joining me, Laura Flanders, is Josh. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So you've been writing, as you do, about the whole gamut of questions this week, from NATO to Afghanistan to Hillary's foreign policy plan. Let's start with the NATO point. You wrote that you support his right to run, but you're not going to be voting for him.
Well, that's right. I think that one of the issues that I brought up is that there's this tendency among Democrats to savage Nader and savage his followers. And I think that the message is you shouldn't vote for a third party because you, in some cases, owe your vote to the Democratic Party if you're a progressive-minded person. And the point that I'm making is that, you know, liberals don't really walk in lockstep. We don't really follow the leadership of a party. We're not susceptible to those kinds of arguments. And actually, they're counterproductive because you tell me who I can and can't vote for, and it just makes me mad.
Not only tell me who I can and can't vote for, but try to, crush opposition through the courts. It's not pretty, and it's not pro-democratic.
That's right. It has nothing to do with small-d democracy whatsoever. And the point that I made is that a more productive argument is to just say, really, look, this is in your own interest this year. You should always vote in your own interest. And I think that, you know, we focus too much on the top of the ticket, on the candidates, on McCain and Obama and Clinton. But the reality is that, you know, the power of the presidency is great. They have a bully pulpit. But, you know, the people that they put into positions, the appointments that they make are just as important. And if you look at the kind of imperative for, I think, progressive-minded people this year, it is to defeat John McCain more than anything else. And I think one of the really important points that I tried to bring out is that the court is in very, very serious trouble. Our judiciary system is a nightmare, and it's becoming incredibly corporatist. The Supreme Court justices are finding new ways to lock regular individuals out of the courtroom and prevent them from getting relief from, you know, more powerful interests. And one more right-wing activist ideological judge, and then you'll have five, and a majority on the court. And at that point, you know, it really doesn't matter who's president for a whole variety of issues, and it doesn't matter who's in Congress, because you will have this court as a gigantic monkey on your back, and it's going to be very, very ugly and very difficult to work around.
All right, so those are your reasons that you're not going to be voting for Nader, but you support his right to run. He picked his vice presidential running mate yesterday, Matt Gonzalez, a good pick, I think, in many respects. I've put out the question to our callers, who would they pick to run with the Democrat? How would you approach that choice, Josh?
Well, you know, there is the conventional wisdom in D.C. circles, which is that you balance out your candidate, and so you find somebody with strengths that are their weaknesses.
Right.
I'm not sure that I adhere to that. I mean, we're looking at
that was the approach that brought Al Gore, Joe Lieberman.
It brought Al Gore and Joe Lieberman, but look, Al Gore and Bill Clinton showed that you can actually have pretty similar people on the ticket, both of them kind of centrists with a populist message, white guys from the South, and do quite well. So I don't know how strong that how much evidence there is that you really need to go that way. But there's certainly going to be pressure on both candidates from various advisors and insiders that's the way you have to approach it. You know, with Obama, I would love to see him take John Edwards, for example, as a vice presidential. Because, you know, I think that he has certain problems with the base, and Edwards has had kind of an explicit and outspoken critique of corporate power that I think that Obama has lacked.
So to go for the John Edwards candidacy that will, quote-unquote, balance you demographically but politically outflank you slightly, perhaps to the left?
Correct. I don't think he's going to go that way, though. You know, I. If you're asking me who I would predict,
that's my next question.
Yeah, I think he's going to go with someone. I think he's going to go with someone who has demonstrated good performance in a red state. I hate those terms, red and blue states. But
me too.
Yeah, well, you know, it's ugly, but we have to go along with the political culture we have. You know, there's been a lot of talk of Tim McCain from Virginia. He has gubernatorial experience, executive experience. He is a religious leftist like Obama. And, you know, he's a white guy who's performed well in the South. The other thing that we're hearing is Catherine Sebelius.
Yep.
And that would certainly animate a lot of the kind of those who are really excited about seeing the first woman elected president. It wouldn't be the top of the ticket, of course, but I think that he could certainly consolidate the party with a Sebelius run.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not
Kathleen Sebelius from Kansas, of course, where that, his mother is from. You'd have a good Kansas approach there.
That's right. That's right. She's a rather conservative Democrat, so I personally wouldn't be thrilled to see that. But you know, obviously, identity politics has been a big part of this nomination process.
She did oppose the war, I think.
She did oppose the war. She did oppose the war. Yes.
Yeah. What do you make of the candidates that people have proposed so far? Jim Webb, Virginia, not governor, but senator, in part because of his ability to outrank McCain on the military front. He, too, has a son in the war, deployed to Iraq. Got a good record on that issue, much less of a progressive record on other things, although he has challenged the Democratic establishment on trade and a handful of other stuff.
Right.
Joe Biden is the other popular pick. Now, he voted for the war. He voted to reinforce the Patriot Act. He has, you know, not the most progressive, which is to say on foreign policy issues, he hasn't had the strongest positioning. He's been a big supporter of the Iraq embargo, I mean, of the Cuba embargo. But on the home front, people remember his good handling of the Clarence Thomas hearings, and he's been a strong supporter of women's issues and one of the big co-sponsors of the Violence Against Women Act. So I think he would have a good pitch at picking up some of Clinton's record, I mean, some of Clinton's base supporters. But he is, you know, exactly what you're saying might be the more conservative way to go demographically, established white guy, one of the longest serving people in the Senate.
Well, you know, that's certainly, I think that there's going to be a lot of calls for Biden, just because he's been, I believe, on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for 112 years.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Maybe 113, maybe.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, you know, he is exactly what you're saying. And obviously Obama is going to face charges that he is all talk, no action and inexperienced. And Biden would balance him out in the same way, oddly enough, that Dick Cheney was brought in to kind of help Bush, who, you know, couldn't name the heads of state of, you know, foreign leaders and stuff like that. So certainly there's going to be, I think, an appeal of a Biden, because you have just this enormous amount of insider Washington experience. That is a double-edged sword, though, right? I mean, Biden is also known as the senator representing the financial interests in Delaware. And so, you know, how that plays with Obama's call for change and
interests. I mean, for those who condemn Barack Obama's failure to support the piece of the bankruptcy bill that would have capped credit card company interest charges at something horrific like 35%, but it was not something he supported, something Hillary Clinton did support. That would be a pretty unattractive package. Biden, they're already accused of being way too close with the banking industry, and that piece of Obama's record, he too, a lot of support from bankers.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I have to say, though, that the question is that the kind of issue that makes or breaks a campaign?
Mm-hmm.
It is pretty wonky. I mean, when you get into the nuts and bolts of the bankruptcy bill, you know, the modern presidential elections are run on, you know, who's...
But it's not just a question of the ability to win. It's a question of the indication of cravenness with respect to the industry. I mean, I'm not thinking in terms of political partisan calculus here, although maybe I should be. I'm more thinking, you know, given that we don't know enough, really, about fortitude, let's say, of Barack Obama's legislative spine, those are the kinds of issues that do give me pause.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, when we're talking about the substance of it, I am, as a progressive, I'm certainly no fan of Joe Biden. I think that that would be a serious concern for the base.
All right, hold it right there. Can we hold you over the break, Josh?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, then we come back. I want a few words on Afghanistan, and we'll take a couple of calls. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Radio Nation. You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. You can find Radio Nation weekends on these Air America radio stations.
Program where smart people get their news. Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Get rich quick? Forget about it. That only happens if you win the lottery, hit the jackpot, or inherit a fortune. The odds are high this won't happen to you. The problem is, if you want to be financially free by the time you retire, you will need to be rich. And you can get rich over time trading stocks. Afraid of the stock market because of its ups and downs? Don't be afraid. The secret to getting rich trading stocks is making money when the market goes up and goes down. You just need movement in the market and Ross Jardine's trading system. Ross Jardine's one of the best traders on the face of the planet, and for a limited time, you can get his trading system free. It's easy to use and requires very little time, and it can make you rich. Ross has taught thousands of people how to make money trading stocks, and he can teach you too. To get Ross's free stock investor toolkit, call 888-664-1275. Stop wasting your time and money on get-rich-quick programs and call 888-664-1275 to get your free stock investor toolkit. It's time to get rich eventually. So call now, 888-664-1275.
Ed Schultz.
More and more people getting on board saying, you know what, maybe this thing is over. I believe it is.
Noon to 3.
It's interesting to read all of these sports analogies that are out there about this battle between Obama and Clinton. Oh, you don't give up until the game's over. Folks, let me give you a sports analogy.
The Ed Schultz Show.
You can go to a track meet, and yes, there is integrity in finishing the race.
Noon to 3.
But you can determine who the winner is long before the damn thing's over with.
AM 620 KPOJ. Online at 620 KPOJ.
Another how-to half minute from the Home Depot.
When are we going to redo the kitchen?
Oh, someday.
Funny. I'm looking at the calendar. I'm seeing a Monday,
yep.
Tuesday,
right.
Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no someday.
Wait a minute. Are you sure?
Update today at the end-of-season decor event and get 10 to 50% off select decor items throughout the store. Only at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through March 12th in U.S. only. Quantities and products may vary. See store for details.
This week's automotive service tip is brought to you by Tom Dwyer.
Have the pH of your vehicle's cooling system tested. Proper pH level is critical to keep electrolysis from damaging your engine. When you do need service, make sure the proper antifreeze is being used. It's not all green out there anymore. Any ASC MasterTech can offer auto tips. Here's a progressive tip. Use your vehicle as a billboard. With corporate media failing us, we need to wake up the sleeping masses. Find messages that move you and display them on your vehicle for others to see. We have many progressive messages free for our clients to wear proudly. Have the courage to show your convictions. Whether it's a KPOJ sticker or a Sinclair Lewis, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross magnet. You'll be challenging some to think, and like-minded people won't feel alone. Change is always bottom-up, one mind at a time. We all need to work for progressive change.
For a must-see bumper sticker video, check out TomDwyer.com. Keeping your vehicle safe, breakdown-free, and operating at their best. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, providing peace of mind service since 1981. 503-230-2300.
You've probably heard it before. After the end of a relationship or marriage, a kindly friend or relative will offer those famous words of support. There are plenty of fish in the sea. Well, that kindly friend or relative is wrong, dead wrong. And not because you're hideous and undesirable, but because the fact is, many fish are declining in number. Now, here's the part where you might ask, what can I do? Well, I'll tell you. On your next date, if you're going out for a nice meal or cooking a romantic dinner at home, be sure to choose fish that are plentiful or caught in an environmentally friendly way. That way, you'll help keep the oceans healthy and full of fish, and you'll look like a sensitive, caring person to whomever you're with. Now that's sure to score you some major points. To find out how to make the right seafood choices and help protect our oceans, and for other easy tips on how to protect our world, log on to GetGreen.com. It's easy to do, and let's be honest, now that you're single and lonely, you've got the time. That's GetGreen.com. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom. You're listening to Air America Radio. We've got an awful lot of people want to talk about the vice presidential pick on the Democratic side and a few people making suggestions via email on the Republican side. Now, these are just scary. John McCain, if he's up against Hillary, some say he would pick Christy Todd Whitman or Elizabeth Dole. Oh, please. Although if he picked Christy Todd Whitman, he could pick Christy Todd Whitman or Condoleezza Rice, and I would be okay with that because I wrote a book about the women in the Bush administration, and there's a good chapter about each one of them, and it would be good for sales. But politically, ugh. The suggestion is that if he is opposed by Barack Obama, McCain might try to get a Colin Powell or Condi Rice running mate, but I don't think Powell would do it. Would he? Surely not. And I think Rice and McCain didn't agree much on Iraq, although, you know, I don't have the inside scoop on that. Our guest is Josh Holland. He writes regularly for alternate.org, most recently on Afghanistan. When we last broke, Josh, I said I'd give you a chance to just quickly bring our audience up to date on what you've been discovering about the deployment in Afghanistan these days. It's back in the news, courtesy of Prince Harry. Prince Harry dragged out of Afghanistan because the Drudge Report decided to break a journalistic agreement across the entire British press and not to say that he was part of the British mission there. The U.S. forces have been longing for more NATO partnership, but Drudge apparently screwed it with respect to this particular participant in the NATO deployment, namely Prince Harry. It became too dangerous for he and his teammates for him to stay there once his presence was known. Harry aside, what do we need to know about Afghanistan?
Well, this week I did a very lengthy interview with Andy Worthington, who was the author of the Guantanamo Files. And I brought out the fact that I think that most Americans have developed a picture of this conflict from the media. And it's a picture that's relatively unambiguous in that they believe that it was a justified conflict and one that was done with a minimal loss of life and a minimal amount of atrocities. And the reality is something very different. You know, the question of why we went into Afghanistan in the first place, this is the common assumption is that there was this kind of seamless integration between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and that we went in as a self-defense mechanism against further attack from Osama bin Laden and his clique. But the reality is that this was a long-standing civil war that had absolutely nothing to do with some clash of civilizations between East and West. And there was actually very limited overlap between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Or another way to put it is that there was a very limited number of people in Afghanistan whose intent was to do damage to the United States. And there was a very large universe of people who had come to Afghanistan from all over the Middle East to fight this civil war, this inter-Muslim civil war. And we went in and allied ourselves with one side and then essentially didn't have any screening mechanisms in place to sort out the wheat from the chaff. And our allies were offered very substantial sums of money for turning over high-level Al-Qaeda operatives to us.
So the result is that we were buying a lot of people for $4,000 or $5,000 a head, which is a lot of money in Afghanistan, and we had no way of really discriminating between hardcore anti-Western terrorists and soldiers and, you know, religious students and aid workers who had gone to Afghanistan to participate in this conflict. So anybody who wasn't an Afghanistani national, we sent to Guantanamo Bay. And, I encourage people to read the whole thing.
No, I do too.
I think that the key takeaway is that, you know, you can't say that Afghanistan was justified and look at it in isolation. Because everything that followed really came from the lack of challenge from Bush's assertion that the only way to respond to a terrorist attack was through acts of war.
All right, Josh, thank you for that. It raises big questions about, for sure, Barack Obama's proposal that troops be removed from Iraq and sent to Afghanistan. This is one deployment almost everybody supported and almost no one is looking at closely in these times. Thanks for your writing, for your work, and for your time on the program with us today. Joshua Holland's writing can be found at alternet.org. I'm Laura Flanders. Check out his interview there with Andy Worthington. We'll be back after the news.
Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide. 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Talk radio for the rest of us.
Talk radio for the rest of us. And that word, us, is the most important part of the sentence. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Radio Nation. And I just got a really... No, you're not. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show on Air America Radio. I'm getting punchy now. It's Friday. I'm excited. We're engaged in a vibrant debate. And I'm getting email from... Christian men in Indiana, people writing me saying they like what I'm doing. This is fun. This is fun. Chris, thanks for writing. He says, kudos from an unlikely fan. You might find it interesting to know that a white Christian male from rural Indiana agrees with almost everything you've been saying. I find it interesting. And just validating that I don't believe the views I'm articulating are views of just a marginal few. I think the kind of perspectives you hear on this program and on Tom's shows when he's here are very broadly held opinions, not limitable to a particular demographic, racial, gender, regional, you name it. I don't think I'm marginal. I think I'm just marginalized. So thanks for writing, Chris. I appreciate it. We've got a lot going on today's program, and let's go to a couple of calls. We're going to try to see if we can get Matt Gonzalez, the running mate for Ralph Nader, in this part of the program, maybe. We're also, I think, in our next few segments going to be talking about the cost of the war at home, what's going on in Iraq, and a brand new movie, Chicago 10, which is hitting the TV, or rather the cinemas near you this weekend. It's a partly animated view on the Chicago conspiracy trial of 1968 and the protests at the Democratic conventions that year that preceded that trial. Great stuff, and the writer-director will be with us, Brett Morgan. Let's take some of your calls. Let's hear from Mitchell in Mahwah, New Jersey. Hey, Mitchell, welcome to the program. Oh, Rachel, are you there? Come in.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm here.
You just disappeared.
Laura?
Yes, you disappeared for a minute there.
Okay. I think that Barack, if he is nominated, should pick Bill Richardson. I think it would be a helpful.
So you think Bill prominent. Richardson? Now, are you doing the demographic thing? He's Latino. He's from the Southwest, or are you picking?
I also think there's some. He's philosophically aligned, I think, with his position internationally of negotiating. He is not a senator. He does have an administrative background, and he has experience internationally as being an ambassador to the United Nations. Now, if you also wanted to look demographically, you might pick someone like Blanche Lincoln from Arkansas, who's a moderate woman, Democratic senator from the South.
I say don't go there. I say don't go there. And what I like about the Bill Richardson suggestion is, demographics aside, here's a guy who wants all troops out of Iraq, no residual forces. We still can't get Barack Obama to commit to taking troops out before, all troops out before 2013. He wouldn't make that commitment. And as far as I can see, totting up the numbers of how many troops he thinks should stay in place to do this and that and this and that, we're talking around 100,000 troops as far as I can see. So I would appreciate Bill Richardson, not just for the demographic reasons, but for his clarity around Iraq. I think he would be a good candidate if it was a Hillary Clinton contested contest, too, because he would stand a chance, I think, of that Latino vote up against John McCain. I thank you for that, Mitchell. We're going to take a break and come back with a couple of special guests. You're going to love or going to hate, but we're going to talk about it. We'll go to it right now. All right, let's go to it right now. I wanted to reconfigure, but why the heck? Why not? You're not going to hear elsewhere the type of lineup we bring you on Air America Radio, because we believe you can take it. You can take debate. And we actually believe in democracy and free speech. So who are we bringing to the air? But I think by the miracle of modern engineering, we have not only Ralph Nader, but also Matt Gonzalez. I'm happy to welcome you both. Ralph, are you there?
We're there. We love the way you talk about the Constitution, my friend.
Okay, very good. And Matt, are you there?
Yes, we're both here in the same studio.
Go for it. Let's start, interestingly enough, with you, Matt. Why are you agreeing to run as Ralph Nader's running mate? Then we'll get to Ralph himself.
Well, I think it's imperative that we not sit on the sideline when we are seeing the political parties struggling over some what we think are fundamental issues. In my own personal experience, I've been a crusader for election reform, and I thought I could contribute to this campaign by talking about it and making it clear to people out there that we've fought for election reform. We fought for ways to demand majority outcomes. You know, I've done it through legislation. I've visited members of Congress, et cetera, et cetera. And that's an important component of the campaign. But also the point that you've just been talking about, which is, I think we have to be careful that we not just accept some of the rhetoric of the candidates, but look at what they're saying and being very careful about. And I think the fact that Senator Obama, the Democratic frontrunner, is really talking about having a standing army in Iraq without giving us a timetable to have everybody out is a troubling. And I think those who want to hear him be a candidate of withdrawal are not listening to some of the specifics that he points out about fighting al-Qaeda and striking al-Qaeda and keeping a force there for counterterrorism, et cetera.
Ralph, to you, you know, I voted for you twice. I don't accept that you were anything to do with Gore's quote-unquote defeat in 2000. I think he won, and I don't think the way that you've been treated by the Democratic Party is right. However, I will say that this election, I've been encouraged and excited by the mobilization around Barack Obama. Not that his voting record is all that reassuring, but I believe he pushes open a door that movements can then shove against, because he's an organizer and his, you know, he's expressed his, you know, appreciation for organizing, and he's validated a lot of organizers around the country as well as training more. So I was surprised to see you run this year. Talk about it. And what are you building?
Well, I take my charge not from the candidates of the major parties. I fought for years to deal with occupational disease and trauma and helped start OSHA in 1970. Under both Democrats and Republicans, OSHA has been essentially turned into a consulting agency. And 58,000 people in this country die every year from workplace-related disease and trauma.
OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
That's right. I take my charge from the almost 100,000 people who the Harvard School of Public Health say lose their lives due to malpractice in hospitals. The Democrats and Republicans have done nothing on that. The Republicans have been worse. They even want to block the courtroom door and the civil justice system under tort law to legitimate full days in court opportunities for injured people. I take my charge from the millions of consumers that are ripped off by the oil companies, by the drug companies, by the banks, by the credit card companies, that both parties in Congress have not done anything about. They leave people defenseless against these rapacious corporations. So, you know, I can give you chapter and verse, and it's on our website, votenator.org. We already start with 12 major subject areas that affect the daily lives and futures of the American people that are off the table by both Obama, Clinton, and McCain, whether it's single-payer health insurance, reducing that enormously wasteful military budget that's taking money out of public works, repair, and jobs all over the country, dealing with stopping nuclear power. None of these major candidates are opposed to nuclear power. Cracking down on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse. Where's their law and order position here?
All right, let me come back to you, Matt Gonzalez. You know, you may know that over the last couple of years, I've been focusing on grassroots mobilizing and the impact and significance of the engagement of many, many, many folks who'd never gotten involved in electoral politics before, at last in electoral politics at a variety of levels, working for Greens, working for independent candidates, working for Democrats, people who just, you know, never did this before, realizing we've got to do it. Nobody else is doing it. We can't keep waiting for a messiah to come. So I've grown in respect for the work that is involved in building movement and building impact on the ground. Therefore, and I know that you agree with me, you ran a very people-powered movement-building campaign in San Francisco when you ran for mayor in 2003, a campaign that I still meet people say that that's what brought them into politics. Again, assessing the stakes right now and assessing where there is potential for building right now. Describe and explain your commitment to do that building outside of the Democratic Party at this minute.
Well, I think there have been a lot of mass movements in politics, not all of them good. And I have certainly, in my political efforts, tried to walk in front of potential voters and what I would call other human beings, some of whom aren't even allowed to vote, and try to talk issues with them and try to win them over and see the rationality of what it is that we're trying to accomplish and how we're trying to accomplish it. I am very impressed with the fact that Senator Obama's campaign in particular has brought many new voters into the fold. But I don't think that the effort stops there, because I think it's important that we're dealing with intelligent voters who are willing to educate themselves on the issues. Now, if a voter says, look, I've looked at Senator Obama's record on NAFTA, I've looked at it on the WTO, I've looked at it on class action reform, I've read the fine print about the war in Iraq, and I still want to vote for him, well, so be it. I mean, that's an intelligent human being making a political choice, and I respect that. But I just worry that we have too much respect and excitement for the voter that's coming into the process, that's kind of swept up in more of the rhetoric and less of the detail.
All right, hold it right there. We're going to take a break and come back with our very special guests, Ralph Nader and Matt Gonzalez. The phone lines are open, 866-303-2270. We'll get in as many of your questions as we can. Let's talk about now and the future. I don't want to have an hour of debate about 0000. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio. I'm sitting in for Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Standing up for freedom, Tom Hartman. Nationwide on AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Get rich quick? Forget about it. That only happens if you win the lottery, hit the jackpot, or inherit a fortune. The odds are high this won't happen to you. The problem is, if you want to be financially free by the time you retire, you will need to be rich. And you can get rich over time trading stocks. Afraid of the stock market because of its ups and downs? Don't be afraid. The secret to getting rich trading stocks is making money when the market goes up and goes down. You just need movement in the market and Ross Jardine's trading system. Ross Jardine's one of the best traders on the face of the planet, and for a limited time, you can get his trading system free. It's easy to use and requires very little time, and it can make you rich. Ross has taught thousands of people how to make money trading stocks, and he can teach you too. To get Ross's free stock investor toolkit, call 888-664-1275. Stop wasting your time and money on get-rich-quick programs and call 888-664-1275 to get your free stock investor toolkit. It's time to get rich eventually. So call now, 888-664-1275.
Protecting our civil rights.
You know, Michigan and Florida, my God, they've been through more ups and downs than the candidates themselves. It's unbelievable.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
Now, don't get the terrible feeling that if we let Florida decide this thing that there are going to be a ton of Florida votes accidentally going to Pat Buchanan again. No, no, no. Just don't let Catherine Harris anywhere near the caucuses and or the voting machines.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
It'll be fine. Jeb's not the governor anymore.
3 to 6.
Don't even let them handle the refreshments if you have a caucus. And we'll be okay. We'll be fine.
AM 620 KPOJ.
620KPOJ.com.
Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
The 50th annual Portland RV Show rolls into the Expo Center next Wednesday through Sunday, March 5th through 9th. This show features all the best models, including motorhomes, easy-to-pull trailers, fifth wheels, vans, campers, tent trailers, and much more. Children under 16 admitted free with paying adult. Be sure to tune into the morning show with Carl and Heidi all this week for your chance to pick up a four-pack of tickets to the show. Don't miss the Southeast Portland Art Walk, a two-day local art walking tour and sale this weekend in Southeast Portland. Take yourself on a free self-guided tour or catch a ride on Eco Shuttle and visit studios, home workspaces, galleries, host homes, and businesses within the walkable, bikeable, and busable boundaries from Southeast 9th to 41st and Hawthorne to Southeast Powell Boulevard. The Southeast Portland Art Walk helps strengthen the art community, encourage cultural awareness, and provide opportunities for community interaction within our neighborhoods. More information available at southeastportlandartwalk.com.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.
The embarrassing part about heartburn is when I'm on a date. I have to get rice or broth. And the guy's like, why don't you order real food?
Heartburn isn't funny. That's why new maximum strength Zantac 150 Cool Mint tablets are serious. It's the same Zantac strength, now with a refreshing hint of cool mint that goes down easy with water. So the suffering stops and life starts. Heartburn? Attack it. Zantac. Use as directed.
Leap year means you get an extra day to get things done. At the Ace Leap Into Savings Sale, you'll find extra ways to save, plus expert help and friendly advice. Get a Rubbermaid trash can, now just $9.99. Or buy a 12-gallon shop vac for $69.99 and get a $20 mail-in rebate. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn points. Hurry, because the sale ends Monday at Ace, the helpful place.
Price is good at participating Ace Hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
Young volunteers everywhere are doing great things for their communities. Through the Kohl's Kids Who Care Scholarship Program, Kohl's plans to recognize more than 1,900 kids with over $300,000 in scholarships and prizes. Nominate someone you know at Kohl's.com through March 15th.
At the first sign of worn brakes, head to the Les Schwab sign for a free brake check. If your brakes need service, we do it right. We do it complete and back it with our full parts and labor guarantee. Les Schwab Brake Service. If we can't guarantee it, we won't sell it.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
You're listening to Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom. See what happens when you go away on a cruise? Nice reporting on the Nation cruise, by the way, by the New York Times. Nice and arch. One of the people that was on that particular Nation cruise that I missed somehow is our guest, Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader's with us along with Matt Gonzalez, and I want to do a big shout-out thanks to the good folks there at WAMU 88.5 FM in D.C. who made it possible for us to snag their ISDN line there for a little bit. Also to Sean Taylor, brilliant snag to get Ralph and Matt available.
Laura, we've actually lost our studio, and we're sharing one telephone. So if you want Ralph, I'll pass him the phone.
All right, fair enough. I still think WAMU's worth thanking, though.
No, they've done a great job, yeah.
I do want to throw one question quickly to Ralph, and we'll come back to you, Matt. And that has to do with movement building. I have tremendous respect for you, Ralph Nader, on the issues. You're right on. You have pushed the progressive agenda your whole career, and not only done you've not only spoken words, right. You've done work that has changed our lives, made our lives safer in many ways.
I'm trying to do both.
Let me ask you, Ralph, about this question of movement building, because the rhetoric has to be matched with the power on the ground if you're going to have an impact in elections. Tell me what you've been doing in between your presidential runs to build that power on the ground.
Hard in this modern day of ours to build mass movements. Look how hard it is just to get people to turn out for rallies and marches. We did better dozens and dozens of years ago on this score as a nation. But we're calling our campaign an 08-09 campaign. And by that, we mean that we'd like to bring together in each congressional district about 1,000 publicly conscious citizens who will form a Congress watchdog lobby on Congress and put before Congress about 10 major redirections of the country, like single-payer health insurance, et cetera. It's on our website, votenator.org. Now, every congressional district has about 600,000 people in it. Just about every congressional district has community colleges, and other institutions that can be tapped into for these 1,000 people. I can't emphasize, as a person who's worked on the Congress for over 40 years and testified and exposed it, I can't emphasize the enormous turnaround value of 1,000 people connected one another, holding accountability sessions, challenging the member of Congress, putting pressure, you know, the usual good old-fashioned American way of lobbying, how it can change the Congress. And a Congress can pivot the entire federal government. It's the most powerful branch of government if it chooses to use its constitutional powers. And that's what we're aiming for, that the more people we get in this campaign, the more we'll say to them, well, after November, there's going to be a real focused movement in each congressional district. So we're gonna have the table out there for people to put their cards on in terms of mobilizing. Without that, it's not going
to
happen.
All right, so I hear what your plan is of how to use this presidential run in a useful way, but my question was, what have you done since 2004? Quick answer from you, and then we'll focus on that in the next segment.
Well, we've had big rallies, we've had worked with demonstrators, but these are too sporadic. They don't last. They don't last. You know, we've tried to stop bad things in Congress. We've tried to stop bad things in the White House. We've tried to get the House Judiciary Committee to initiate impeachment proceedings. The Democrats won't touch it. Very bad precedent for future presidents to become similar outlaws. What I'm saying is Washington is shut down on people, and that's why we've got to go back into the district.
All right.
But it's going to take a lot of work, and people are going to have to raise their own expectations of themselves in terms of controlling the U.S. Congress.
All right, Ralph Nader there. We'll come back with your calls and Matt Gonzalez, Ralph's pick for running mate. He's the VP candidate on the Ralph Nader VP ticket. The Greens are out there, going to get you. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show on Air America Radio. Thank you so much, Ralph Nader. We'll pick it up with Matt when we return.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Back. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show on Air America Radio. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom. If you want to email me and your memory doesn't stretch back as far as yesterday, and why should it, frankly, you can email me at Flanders, like the fields, Flanders.Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at gmail.com, Flanders.Laura at gmail.com. A little bit later, we're going to be hearing from Clara Jeffrey, editor of Mother Jones magazine. They've got a whole new package about the war coming home, our various wars coming home. Torture Hits Home is the cover of this package in the March-April issue of Mother Jones magazine. While we're talking about the cost of these wars, and Nobel Prize-winning economist Joe Stiglitz puts the cost at $3 trillion today in a new book co-authored with Harvard professor Lindy Belms. $3 trillion. So much for the Bush administration promise that it would cost us less than $2 billion. I'm still waiting for somebody to send me the number of zeros involved here. But if you add the lifetime health care and counseling for veterans, not to mention their families, we're talking $7 trillion. Do I hear 10? We'll hear from Clara Jeffrey. Patrick Coben, with any luck, will join us from London, if he's not in Iraq or Afghanistan. He's an extraordinary crusading reporter covering the U.S. wars the U.S. media would rather forget. And in our last segment, Brett Morgan will join us. He's the writer-director of a new film, Chicago 10, that he hopes will bring contemporary audiences back to the scene, 1968, of that extraordinary Chicago conspiracy trial, with the participation, of course, of civil rights attorney Bill Kunstler, Abby Hoffman. Where are the Abby Hoffmans today? You tell me. Meanwhile, in this hour, we've got Matt Gonzalez with us. He was just selected by Ralph Nader to run as his VP candidate on this run for the presidency. Matt, how much of tell me a little bit about the Green Party's role in all of this. I know Cynthia McKinney is running, but you're Green. I'm confused.
Yeah, well, you know, Ralph and I discussed this before I agreed to join him on the ticket, and we ultimately agreed that we would run as independents. We thought that we both respect and admire Cynthia and appreciated her good work. She joined the party recently, and we just felt like, you know, we don't need to compete against other good candidates who are trying to accomplish what we're trying to do, and we thought more voices would be better than less. And it also helps underscore that this isn't just about Ralph Nader. Even if Ralph Nader had decided not to run, you're always going to have other candidates out there trying to bring reform in this political contest. And so what we should focus on as a country is trying to come to terms with, why do we continue to allow, you know, candidates to win the presidency without winning a majority of the vote? It's happened so many times in our history that it's simply not an accident that the system is built to keep two parties in power.
Oh, let's take some calls. I could ask you endless questions, but I promised callers I would bring them in. Jack in L.A. is with us. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program. You've got a question for Matt Gonzalez?
Yes. Hello, Mr. Gonzalez.
Hi.
And kudos to your run. I was just wondering if you thought, I mean, I was a little confused about this whole 9/11 thing, because we were told that Saudi suicide bombers were the ones we were told that did it, and then we go and go fight this war in Afghanistan while the crime scene is being, you know, fouled. And then there seems to be this big, and then Iraq, and then they want Iran. And do you think that they really want those for, like a Caspian Sea?
Good question, Jack. Thanks a lot. Back to you, Matt.
Yeah, let me address it this way, and I think it's an interesting point, which is, you know, the commission and all the inquiry of how 9/11 happened was supposed to result in decision making based on what the facts were. And most of what we learned was there was a lack of communication within intelligence agencies, et cetera. But what was sold to the American public was this idea that we needed espionage, we needed the Patriot Act, we needed a dissolution of our civil rights and civil liberties. And one of the most frustrating things about our opposition party, the Democratic Party, is that they went along with this. I mean, they really put down and have helped bolster this regime that they're so quick to blame Ralph Nader for. They've been so complicit in it that it's just incredibly frustrating to have to hear these attacks of Ralph.
All right, Ben in New Jersey's got a question. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, I actually have a comment, but thank you for taking my call. I think it's a very bad move for Mr. Nader to run. I think he's a great guy, but I think he's not a viable candidate. I think it will only take away votes from Senator Obama, who is a viable candidate and who really could unite the country.
All right. Thanks, Ben. We're going to let you go.
Yeah. You know, I would just say that, you know, there have been instances in our country's history where candidates were not viable who were talking about important issues. Debs thought women should be allowed to vote. James Burney thought slavery should be abolished. If you had lived in their time, would you have said, well, I can't vote for them because that's throwing my vote away and I got to go for a viable candidate? Some would say that, and fine, I respect it, but, you know, I would have voted for them.
All right, here's a quirky take on all of this. While there are those, and I'm sure there will be many who will say this is hurting Obama for you to run, I have another way of looking at it, which is I'm concerned that all these young people who are so excited about Obama, and most of them, I think probably politically, or at least a lot of them based just on my anecdotal reporting, are politically sort of to the left of Obama, frankly. They're probably for single-payer health care.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
They're probably, you know, for a much tougher approach to the credit card companies. They're probably for, they're probably against the use of liquid coal, something that he's for. But I'm worried that these folks who have gotten so excited by the style of his campaign, and one man put it this way to me, he said, I like the message, but I love the method, that they're enjoying this experience, that they will look at your run, yours and Ralph Nader's, and feel alienated from the left, with you as representatives of the left. That's the strange way I look at it, at this, and it worries me.
You know, I think that it's often the case that decisions that you make based on principle can lead to unusual outcomes like that. But I think the opposite can't be the answer. It can't be because we fear that somebody can't rationally work through the importance of having candidates, you know, stand firm on some of these issues. You know what I mean? It just seems like a slippery slope that would mean that nobody could ever run for office if they didn't agree with those two-party viewpoints. And in Senator Obama's case, while, again, I like the enthusiasm, you know, his voting record is not reassuring. It's unfortunately one that shows a lot of capitulation to Republican interests. And I think it's important that we be out there calling him on that. And if people vote for him, I respect that. But let's do it with eyes open.
Mac Gonzalez is our guest. He's former San Francisco supervisor and board president, ran in 2003 for San Francisco mayor, almost beat Gavin Newsom. And Gavin was the one with the established Democratic Party support, pushed Newsom to more progressive positions on a variety of issues, including gay marriage, made Newsom something of a liberal poster child, such that he scares John Kerry. I don't think wanted his participation on his campaign, and I think what I'm hearing is Obama didn't want to be photographed with him. So you had a good impact on Gavin Newsom. But I will just to hammer this one more time: you've got this multiracial, multigenerational movement with potential behind Obama. Are you not concerned that liberal white guys get framed as spoilers here?
But wait a second, we're not white guys, and I think
we're in a nasty media environment.
No, I understand, and I think that if anything, it's more the reason that we make sure that this enthusiasm is based on substance. I also want to say
Ralph
something.
Ralph is Arab, I know, but
a lot of times, hold on, a lot of times, Laura, you know, we get told, oh, you got to just run for local offices. Don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, I ran for mayor of San Francisco, and I had Bill Clinton, Al Gore, Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, all suddenly coming into town to campaign against me to say, oh, the Greens shouldn't win this local office. So, they talk a good game about why we shouldn't run, but it just they're not consistent in how they put together this argument.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, let's take another call. You know, you can hear my being torn here. David's on the line in Seattle, and then we've got to let Matt go. David's here, and I do urge people to read the very extensive and clear point by point. Argument that Matt Gonzalez makes in the pages on the web pages of counterpunch.org today, going through the issues, why he's made this decision. David, join the program.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. Just a couple quick comments. I appreciate Mr. Holland bringing up the idea of the U.S. Supreme Court. For a few months, I've been trying to see if there's some way we can organize a grassroots effort to move to impeach every member of the current U.S. Supreme Court with the exception of Stevens, Ginsburg, and Souter, as was done against Justice William O. Douglas a number of years ago. As far as Mr. Nader running again, perhaps he can refocus the debate. But if I wanted to vote for a cranky old narcissist, I'd just go ahead and vote for Mr. McCain.
Now, you're not saying you would vote for McCain over Nader.
If I wanted a cranky old narcissist, yes.
You know, Laura, this happens a lot, and I've encountered this in politics, which is, you know, when you're standing up trying to do stuff, when I ran for district attorney or ran for mayor or, had the gall to think I could be the president of the board, people called me a narcissist. When I finished my term in office and went off and started a progressive law practice, I was a narcissist, even though we were filing suit against civil grand juries for not having enough Latino representation on them. We were filing lawsuits against entire superior courts, against police brutality, against Clear Channel in speech cases. You know, we're not narcissists because we want to stand up and fight this fight. We have long histories of trying to implement election reform. And I would just say to the caller, I hope that he calls a program that Senator Obama or Clinton or McCain are on and say, you guys have been in government a long time. What the hell have you done to fix what happened in Florida in 2000? And if you haven't done anything, then shut your mouth. Mm. You really don't have standing to continue to complain about this.
Well, go ahead.
Well, no, we're in this awkward position where if we don't run, the thing will never get fixed, and we'll just be told every 4 years not to run. And if we run and talk substantively on the issues, we're told we're going to have this bad outcome. And I don't see that it can be repaired without a big discussion in this country about the problem. And I think that's what I bring to the candidacy.
All right. I want to thank both of you for continuing to do the work that you do. This is the Chicano Lebanese American ticket, people.
Thank you so much, Laura. Thank
Give
you.
It a try. Thanks so much. Matt Gonzalez has his piece, The Obama, Count Me Out, The Obama Craze, at counterpunch.org. Ralph Nader has a website, ralphnader08.org, I think it is. We'll put a link up. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll take some of your calls. We'll talk about the war and a new movie out about the Chicago 8 trials. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. You're tuned to Tom Hartman Nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
If you had purchased gold 2 years ago, you would have seen a $10,000 investment be worth over $18,000 today. And the good news is that gold continues to be at only 40% of its previous high in 1980, considering inflation. And some experts predict gold could reach as high as $2,000 an ounce, which means investors could potentially turn a $10,000 investment into over $20,000. Now, every investment has risks, and past performance does not guarantee future returns. But you owe it to yourself to get a free consultation from the professionals at Blanchard. For over 30 years, Blanchard has helped people invest wisely in gold. In fact, Blanchard even gives you a buyback guarantee. So call for a free, no-obligation consultation on the coins that are positioned right now to give you solid returns. Gold American Eagles are guaranteed by the U.S. government for weight and purity, and Blanchard has an attractive radio offer for those who call today. So call 888-730-GOLD. That's 888-730-GOLD. Don't wait. Call 888-730-GOLD. 888-730-GOLD.
Portland's most knowledgeable radio listeners know that the best talk hosts are on AM 620 KPOJ.
What's the deal? These guys haven't paid up, Tom.
Carl Wilson in the morning.
What polls aren't they reading? What polls aren't they taking?
Tom Hartman.
This is how corrupt the system has become.
Ed Schultz.
I was feeling a little bit feisty.
Randy Rhodes.
I'm big bad Randy. I'm bad guy.
Portland's best talk is right here on the left. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
If saving the environment and saving money are important to you, check out the new partially zero-emission Subarus at Car Subaru in Beaverton. Right now, we're offering ultra-green, partially zero-emission Subarus starting at 0% interest and rebates as high as $1,500 cash back. PZEV Edition Subarus are the ultimate in fuel efficiency with 90% cleaner emissions than most new vehicles. That's even lower than some hybrids. And right now, Car Subaru has a huge selection of PZEV models to choose from, all with Subaru's symmetrical all-wheel drive. 5, and all starting at 0% interest with rebates as high as $1,500 cash back. So save the environment and some money, too, at Car Subaru with the latest partially zero-emission Subarus. All starting at 0% interest and rebates as high as $1,500 cash back. Car Subaru off Highway 217 on Canyon Road in Beaverton, where salaried salespeople see it your way. Think, feel, drive Subaru. Emissions data for PZEV Subarus taken from Subaru.com.
Investments in securities involve the risk of loss.
You may not think of yourself as being affluent. You may not think of yourself as a high net worth investor. But it doesn't matter what kind of car you drive or the home you live in. If your investments are $500,000 or more, you're a high net worth investor. And one thing we know about you is that there are 8 common mistakes high net worth investors can make without even knowing it. We're Fisher Investments, and we've put together a special free report just for you. It's called The 8 Biggest Mistakes Investors Make and How to Avoid Them. It's yours free, just for calling 1-800-600-9525. Just avoiding any one of these mistakes could help you better reach your goals, now and over time. As your portfolio grows and changes, your strategy needs to grow and change. That's why this is valuable information you must see. For your free copy of The 8 Biggest Mistakes Investors Make and How to Avoid Them, pick up the phone now. Call 1-800-600-9525. That's 1-800-600-9525.
Muse Art and Design is proud to sponsor the Southeast Area Art Walk Saturday and Sunday between 10 and 5. This free community event will showcase work by more than 90 local artists in their studios and homes. The Art Walk is a fun way to support artists in inner Southeast neighborhoods and get inspired by their creative paintings, photography, jewelry, metalwork, and more. Pick up a walking map at Muse Art and Design on Hawthorne at 42nd and mention KPOJ for 10% off art supplies to create your own art. For more information, visit museartanddesign.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman. We just apparently conducted the very first national media interview with Matt Gonzalez since Ralph Nader picked him as his running mate, and the first Nader and Gonzalez have done together. So round of applause to everybody involved, and there's a lot to think about in what we've just heard. I think it's all good stuff to be thinking about, so that's why we like democracy. All right, 866-303-2270, that's the number to call. Let's hear a couple of callers weighing in on the question of VP choices, and in the next hour we're going to transition to the price we are paying, the cost of these wars. Torture Hits Home is the cover of a package at Mother Jones this March and April issue. One of the editors, Clara Jeffrey, will be with us, and we'll get updates on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan from reporter Patrick Coburn, as well as others. Meanwhile, Jeff's been waiting in Tacoma. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Laura. Good to talk to you.
You too.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I love Ralph Nader. I love Matt Gunn. I've been in the green for a long time. And Nader was my first political hero, I guess. My first speech that I saw was at the Labor Temple in Seattle. And so I'm really excited that he's in the process. I'm a little concerned, though, that he's not representing a party, that he's not part of a already existing broad-based popular movement. And that's kind of what's pushed me over into the direction of the Democrats this time and why I caucused for Obama. And so since I'm involved, you know, I get chosen to jump ship and go to the Greens. And so I do want Obama to pick a good VP. So
who would you pick?
Here, okay, basically, I have three criteria. What's good for the people, which they...
Oh, you're coming in and out here. What's good for the people?
Oh, sorry. What's good for the people, political considerations, which will probably be at the top of their list. And third, and something nobody wants to talk about, Gary, is threat insurance. Basically, we need somebody who is like a Dick Cheney, who the right will be so terrified that he'll become vice president that they won't try to impeach or do something terrible to Obama. And so in my view, Richardson...
Oh, you're coming in and out. Richardson, what? Right. I'm assuming you're saying Richardson doesn't do it.
He doesn't really cut it because he's kind of a fiscal, conservative, sort of corporate-friendly guy at bottom. Biden's way out.
Jim Webb's okay. He's got the GI Bill of Rights and everything, but he doesn't have a national name.
No.
The thing that people push for is John Edwards, because he's got that progressive populist thing going. He's got a good story. He's a national name.
Uh-huh.
But my top choice has to be, and nobody's going to believe this, but it's got to be Al Gore. And I know that's crazy, but if he was on the ticket, it would be a massive landslide. We couldn't help but win. He's good on the Constitution, on the war, and global warming. We would mop the floor with John McCain, and then he could quit 6 months later.
Well, let me think about that. I mean, I think what we know about Al Gore is he doesn't want to be back in the White House in any capacity. And as vice again, I truly doubt it. But in terms of all the political questions you've just raised, it's a good one to throw out there, I would say. I don't have an immediate yay or nay on it in my head. I have to think about it. But it's a very good and creative suggestion, and I thank you for it, Jeff. Also, I think the challenge, you know, one of the good things that wouldn't just be strategic in an Al Gore pick would be that Gore, with any luck, because he seems to have learned a lot since he was VP, Gore might be able to stiffen the spine of Obama on environmental issues. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's out there pushing this liquid coal thing. Coal burning, whether you translate it into liquid fuel or not, you're still burning coal. Coal burning contributes to global warming and smog. This is not a creative approach to our environmental problem, although it has attracted the support of otherwise sane people on the environment, like Brian Schweitzer and others. It is not an alternative fuel. It's the same old fuel at base, liquid coal. And maybe an Al Gore VP running mate might push Obama out of it on that particular issue. So there you go. There's one suggestion. Colleen's got another one. You're going to have to be very quick, Colleen. You got 30 seconds.
Hi. I would vote for Cynthia McKinney and Dennis Kucinich. I think they have what it takes to push this progressive agenda to balance this country.
So go for the green ticket altogether.
Well, no. Green and progressive
green
Democrat.
Green and dissent. And Dennis. You got it. Okay. Well, but, okay, that's an interesting point. But has Dennis ever expressed any willingness to abandon running on the Democratic side and run with McKinney, which would have to be a green platform?
Suggesting he leave the Democratic. I'm suggesting we have a mixed ticket, and I think that's something progressives can say yes to.
Interesting. All right. That's an interesting idea. Colleen and Glenn Allen, thanks so much for calling. We're going to take a break and come back. A mixed party ticket. Can you even do that? I'd have to find out. 866-303-2270. I am willing to admit when I don't know things. There's news coming up, and then Clara Jeffrey, Patrick Coburn, and more.
Tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide. 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom. Ahoy there, Tom, on the high seas. Hope you're enjoying the Air America cruise. It's always fun out there on the high seas, but it's coming to an end, that cruise. They'll all be home in time for Monday. It's been great here being with you on the Tom Hartman Program these last few days. Always good to sit in for Tom. One of the things we're talking about in this program is the cost of war. Nobel Prize winning economist Joe Stiglitz has come out with a new book co-authored with a Harvard University professor. It's titled The $3 Trillion War. He estimates that, it doesn't cost under $2 billion, which is what George Bush's administration told us in the run-up to the invasion in 2003, but rather $3 trillion. And Douglas in Berkeley has done me the favor of helping me to understand what a trillion is. Now, I haven't had a chance to check this out, but I'm just going to trust you, Doug. Douglas says, "Hi, Laura. To get a grasp on just how much $1 trillion is, there are 12 zeros in $1 trillion. To spend $1 trillion, one need only spend 1,000 every second for 2,000 years. It makes me cough. 1,000 every second for 2,000 years. That'll add up to a trillion. Among our population of 300 million, that's a $10,000 bill for every man, woman, and child. Thanks, Douglas. The kicker is that that $3 trillion number doesn't even count the cost, well, certainly doesn't count the cost of a continued military presence in Iraq, and it doesn't count lifetime health care or counseling for vets. Add that into the calculation, and you're up between $5 trillion and $7 trillion, and I don't think it would be too crazy to get up to 10. I say all that because too few people are looking at the long-term costs of this war, and not just the concrete nuts and bolts costs, but the health care and counseling costs. A lot of this country, for example, in polls say they're okay with the use of torture. Survey after survey, two-thirds of Americans say torture's justified when it's used to get information from terrorists. That's how the polls are always phrased. But hardly anyone is discussing the repercussions already being felt here at home of sending people out essentially to be torturous. Justine Sharrock wrote about this in a really good and important story that's in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine, the March or April issue. She says, it's the soldiers tying the sandbags around Iraqis' necks and blaring the foghorns through the night who are experiencing the effects most acutely, and the communities they're returning to are reeling as a result. Here to talk about this cover story package of articles looking at the cost at home, Torture Hits Home is the title, is Clara Jeffrey, one of the editors at Mother Jones magazine. Clara, thanks for joining us. This is a great package of reporting, and Justine's story really stands out. Lay out some of it for our listeners, if you would.
Thanks for having me, Laura. Well, Justine Sharrock basically profiles this young soldier, Ben Albright, who has returned to his community near Little Rock, having been asked to soften up detainees in Iraq, doing everything from, blasting music at them to depriving them of food and adequate clothing and warmth and that kind of things. And, although Ben himself didn't participate in things that were worse, was certainly present when beatings and so forth were handed down. He's really been struggling with this. When he first came back, he was blogging a lot about it and felt that in part that the Army would kind of come after him for this. They didn't really. In fact, the hardest thing for him was that nobody seemed to care. Nobody seemed to care about the debate about torture, and nobody seemed to care what was happening to him as a result, sort of agonizing the guilt he felt over what he had done and what he had witnessed.
There's a chilling, well, there's several chilling descriptions in Justine's piece. One I thought was particularly interesting was her description of this man, Ben, who, polite guy, 27 years old, upstanding man from Little Rock. He's talking to her about an interrogation of a detainee in 2003 who was put through the whole two-hour ordeal without saying a word. She describes what was done to him. It wasn't the kind of thing that hits the headlines, but nothing pleasant. For 2 hours, he didn't speak. And Ben then found out that this detainee couldn't understand the questions that were coming at him in English and Arabic. He spoke Farsi. And what Justine points out is that as he's telling this story of how he felt after that interrogation, he went behind the building, cried, etc., he's in his bedroom back home in Little Rock, pulling the blankets up around him and hugging a pillow. And yeah, I thought, what stories are happening in the bedrooms of America that we're not seeing?
That's right. I mean, you know, there are obviously thousands and thousands of soldiers who are participants or witnesses in interrogations and renditions and guarding of prisoners and worse. And, you know, like many like Ben, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, worships Dave Eggers, who watches the radio, you know, The Daily Show, who is an indie rock devotee. I mean, he's not maybe the stereotype that people would have of the kind of guys who beat up on prisoners. But, you know, here he was, you know, sort of dragged along into this. And he actually kept raising concerns to his commanders and brought up the Geneva Conventions and was just, you know, basically shouted down by commanders and other soldiers that, you know, just sort of belittled him for being a softie.
Mm. Now, this is just one of the stories in this cover package, Torture Hits Home. This has been a subject that Mother Jones has been covering pretty consistently. When you see the discussion of the cost of this war, what do you think?
Well, I think, again, we're not really taking in the long-term accounts, not only to the soldiers who participated, although I think that that's been really kind of underreported. I mean, of course, you know, the major concern should go to the detainees who were abused, but the kids basically who were kind of, you know, dragged along to take part in this also suffer a lot. And then I think there's just a greater, there's a greater cost to our culture. I mean, you know, it's not just that Fox's 24 gives us the so-called ticking time bomb defense every week. We talk about this other Fox reality show where people are actually offering themselves up to be put in solitary confinement as part of a reality show. And it's just, you know, it's just sort of seeping into our culture that this kind of behavior is acceptable. And it really, you know, it really goes against the sort of core fundamental values that we have about our country, that there's a right to due process, that we, you know, that we do not engage in torturing people. And I think even amongst people who were very concerned about this when the photos broke in Abu Ghraib, you know, people have just sort of turned away from really engaging in what this means. I mean, we saw during the Gonzalez and Mukasey confirmation hearings, you know, there wasn't a lot of public outrage anymore. It was just sort of like, yeah, torture, waterboarding, whatever.
You're absolutely right, and there's barely a store you can go into these days where the color khaki doesn't seem to be over every single piece of clothing. This is a very big and important story that you continue to be covering there at Mother Jones. I thank you for it. Before we let you go, one of the other characters that Justine Chirac writes about is the man who blew the whistle on Abu Ghraib. He got some attention early on because he was receiving death threats, and not thanks, but death threats for doing this. Where is he now? What do we know about him now?
Well, he's actually, although Justine did meet with him, I mean, we do not disclose his current location. He's basically in hiding. I mean, he received death threats, and so did his family, and the Army basically eventually relocated him altogether. And this was, he said, his last interview that he would give on the subject.
Mm. This is Joseph Darby, the man who was essentially outed on national television while he was still deployed with his unit. None of them knew what he had done by Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, I mean, he describes in this piece, which you can read at motherjones.com, that, you know, he's sitting in a mess hall in Abu Ghraib, and Donald Rumsfeld calls him out by name, supposedly to thank him, but whatever. And, you know, Darby drops his fork mid-bite as, like, 400 guys in the mess hall turn to look at him. And, I mean, it's Cy Hirsch had already published something about him in the New Yorker, but as Darby says, sort of funnily, you know, about a bunch of guys out there on the front line, he's like, but who reads the damn New Yorker?
And the one commitment he had asked from the military was that they keep his identity secret. And they had given him that commitment.
I mean, it was, you know, having this being blared on CNN that really sort of put him in danger.
Joseph Darby's story is part of the story by Justine Chirac in the current issue of Mother Jones. March-April issue at the newsstands now. You can find it at motherjones.com. Clara Jeffrey, thank you for your work, and give our regards to Justine. What a good piece of work.
I will. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All right, when we come back, more of your calls, then we'll be hearing from Patrick Coben on what's going on in Iraq. He says it's simply falling apart. And Brett Morgan will be with us, writer-director of the new film Chicago 10.
Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
You're listening to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
This is Vasilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Attention, truth seekers.
Bush and everyone associated with his administration is a liar.
The Mike Malloy Show.
And everything that they have done, every signing statement he has made a lie out of every act he has signed.
Armed with just facts and logic.
He lied us into a war.
It's Mike Malloy.
When the entire world sees the evidence that what Bush says is a lie.
Evenings 8 to 11.
Bush continues to maintain the lie.
AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This week's automotive service tip is brought to you by Tom Dwyer.
Have the pH of your vehicle's cooling system tested. Proper pH level is critical to keep electrolysis from damaging your engine. When you do need service, make sure the proper antifreeze is being used. It's not all green out there anymore. Any ASC MasterTech can offer auto tips. Here's a progressive tip. Use your vehicle as a billboard. With corporate media failing us, we need to wake up the sleeping masses. Find messages that move you and display them on your vehicle for others to see. We have many progressive messages free for our clients to wear proudly. Have the courage to show your convictions. Whether it's a KPOJ sticker or a Sinclair Lewis, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross magnet. You'll be challenging some to think, and like-minded people won't feel alone. Change is always bottom-up, one mind at a time. We all need to work for progressive change.
For a must-see bumper sticker video, check out TomDwyer.com. Keeping your vehicles safe, breakdown-free, and operating at their best. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, providing peace of mind service since 1981. 503-230-2300.
Hi, I'm Jan Levin, president of Purity Products. You probably know the incredible health benefits fish oil has for your heart, skin, joints, even your memory and concentration. But what you may not know is not all fish oils are the same. For years, I've developed my Omega Berry fish oil to be the very best. Its advanced formula has up to 3 times the strength of ordinary fish oil. It's so powerful, the only way I could make it better is to give it away for free. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I believe so strongly in the extra power of my Omega Berry fish oil, I'll give you a free bottle so you can try it before you buy it. Call 1-800-900-4964. This triple-strength formula also gives you the powerful, energizing antioxidants from berries. And now you can experience the difference yourself free. Find out how to get your free bottle of Omega Berry fish oil. Call 1-800-900-4964. That's 1-800-900-4964.
ID theft, corruption, scams, and cover-ups. No matter what the crime, the On Your Side investigators dig deeper to get you results. The On Your Side investigators, only on K2 News. On Your Side.
Young volunteers everywhere are doing great things for their communities. Through the Kohl's Kids Who Care Scholarship Program, Kohl's plans to recognize more than 1,900 kids with over $300,000 in scholarships and prizes. Nominate someone you know at Kohl's.com through March 15th.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Show that the nightstick became the symbol of what demonstrators could expect who were demonstrating against the continuance of this bloody and unjustified war in Vietnam. We will demonstrate that free speech died here in the streets under those clubs, and that the bodies of these demonstrators were the sacrifices to its death.
So you think you're going to get a fair trial?
A high holiday. Things work out right here. Yeah, we can get the usual fair trial.
It's an interesting film. It is partly animated, partly using historical footage, and it's all about the Chicago 8 trial, the Chicago conspiracy trial of 1968 that followed the protests outside the Democratic National Convention of that year. We're going to talk to the writer-director of that film, Chicago 10, in just a bit. But first, joining us on the line from London, Patrick Coburn writes for The Independent, also seen and read on counterpunch.org. He's the author most recently of The Occupation, War, Resistance, and Daily Life in Iraq, and he has a book coming out any minute now from Scribner's, Muqtada al-Sadr, The Shia Revival and the Struggle for Iraq. He is also in the interests of full disclosure, my uncle, one of them. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You write, Iraq is disintegrating faster than ever. That isn't what we're reading elsewhere in the headlines in this country, where the discourse is endlessly about declining levels of violence. Explain.
Yes. The concentration is all on really on American military casualties and to a slightly lesser degree on Iraqi civilian casualties that are going down and not really on the reasons this has happened. But Iraq is ever more divided. It's divided between Sunni and Shia, who don't feel comfortable even in the same room anymore. And over the last week, we've had the Turks quite happily invading northern Iraq against the protests of the Kurds, but without, I think, in most of the rest of the Iraq, very little sympathy.
Now, with respect to the Turkish invasion of Iraq, the news today is the Turks have said, we've done what we needed to do, we'll leave, we'll redeploy. Is that it? Is that business as usual? We can just forget about it?
No, it's not, you know, because it's, I think people miss out on just how extraordinary a situation it is. Most countries in the world do not invade their neighbors at will. You know, and we have, you know, Israeli troops go into Gaza, I guess, at will. But suddenly Turkey regards itself as having the right to invade northern Iraq, and the United States goes along with this, and initially at least the government in Baghdad didn't protest very vociferously. But this really changes everything in northern Iraq. One of the few good things to come out of the invasion was that the Kurds did have an autonomous region. It's the one part of Iraq which is peaceful, and now that's being destroyed because the Turks, as they left, said, well, we might be back at any moment. And you can't have any sort of peace country in which a neighbor says, oh, by the way, I might invade any moment I feel like it. I might send my helicopters, I might send my bombers, I might send my tanks.
Now, the position of the United States vis-a-vis the Turkish relationship to the Kurdish region of Iraq has been hypocritical for years. The incursion of this month was just one of many, many that preceded the U.S. invasion of Iraq, but took place, for example, during that period when the U.S. military was policing the airfields or the air above Iraq and bombing any Iraqi that seemed to be taking any action in that area. During that period, too, the Turks would invade and say they were pursuing the Workers' Party, the guerrillas of the Kurdish independence movement. Turkey was an ally, of course, and the U.S. looked the other way. With respect to this particular incursion is a kind of polite word for what happened on the ground. At least 24 Turkish soldiers dead, as many as 250 Kurdish fighters possibly. Patrick, incursion doesn't really cover. We've got 20 seconds. We'll pick it up after the break.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been much coverage of it. And which is partly it's in such an obscure area. But it's, you know, the whole of Iraqi Kurdistan has been shaken by what's happened.
We're going to pick this up after the break. This is a very, very underbelly soft spot of U.S. policy in the region, and we shouldn't let the headlines end with Turkey's announcement of a withdrawal. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, Nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders. We're talking about the politics, not just of here, but everywhere. We're trying to keep a global picture, even though most of our election debate seems to be taking place in entire isolation from the implications of U.S. policy for the world. Speaking of the world, we're talking with Patrick Coburn right now. He's the author most recently of a book that was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award, Occupation, The Occupation, War, Resistance, and Daily Life in Iraq. And he's about to come out with a big, new, important book about Muqtada al-Sadr. Patrick's been writing for The Independent, and you can read his writing at counterpunch.org. If you don't have a sub for The Independent, Iraq Falls Apart is his most recent post. In it, Patrick, you say that, you know, while there's a lot of debate in the U.S. these days about the surge, and the two Democratic contestants were basically asked to sort of compete with one another about how sorry they ever were that they had ever said that the surge might not work. That was the nature of the Iraq debate 2 weeks ago. This week, the debate was, I think, the discussion of Iraq took about 4 minutes. The discussion of Louis Farrakhan took about seven. You can see where this is going. The news that you report is if the Bush administration, if the Americans in Iraq had any friends, they were the Kurds, and they may have lost those friends through their attitude towards the Turkish invasion of northern Iraq, Kurdish area, these last 10 days, I guess it was. So where does that leave U.S. power in Iraq?
Well, it leaves it in a very fragile situation. I think that one of the great mistakes in America, a lot of American media coverage of Iraq, and particularly the perception from Washington and New York, and is the belief that somehow it's always the U.S. which makes the political weather in Iraq. Well, an awful lot of things happen there for completely different reasons. I mean, what's happened over the last couple of years has been that the rebellion against the occupation came from the Sunni community, and who were fighting the American forces there. That was one war. But there was a second war going on in Iraq, which is in many ways bloodier, which was between the Sunni and the Shia. And the Sunni were losing that very badly. So towards the end of 2006, they decided that they couldn't go on fighting the Shia and the Americans and al-Qaeda at the same time. So they thought, we must have a deal with the Americans for the moment. So the new awakening councils, the so-called concerned citizens, are in fact all guerrillas who are fighting the Americans before, and many of them expect to be fighting the Americans in future. It really never had much to do with the surge.
Muqtada al-Sadr, the key player, is the subject, in that scenario, is the subject of your new book. Give us a quick thumbnail of his continuing importance and why you think it is that he agreed to extend his forces' ceasefire for another 6 months. To me, that seems like the best explanation for a decline in violence on the ground, if there has been such a thing. It's almost never discussed in reference to this so-called surge.
Yes, I mean, Muqtada, I mean, is very important because he leads the only real mass movement in Iraq, which is the movement of the Shia poor, and that's about half or more of the Iraqi population. So what he does has always been very important. As you said, the ceasefire he declared, it was critical in the fall in casualties. But again, it's something that may go on for 6 months. They've extended it for 6 months. It may in fact not go on for so long. But, these are the sort of things which really sort of, as I said, decide what's happening inside Iraq, and not really initiatives coming from the Pentagon and coming from Washington.
All right, Patrick Coben, thank you so much. Folks, you can follow Patrick's writing at counterpunch.org. Iraq Falls Apart is the most recent post. Do get active in the ways that you seek to inform yourself about what's happening in Iraq. Don't allow this story to be just fed to you by the so-called mainstream media. They're really missing most of the picture, I think we can say, at this point in this country. Patrick, thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Talk again soon. When we come back, a quick preview of a new film hitting the cinemas this weekend, Chicago 10. It's part history lesson, a whole lot entertaining. We'll have the writer-director, Brett Morgan, with us on the show. Stay tuned.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
A bleeding heart independent. Tom Hartman, nationwide on AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. I've been telling you for a while now how great the Shark Steam Mop is, and if you haven't picked one up yet, you really need to. It's the easiest, fastest, and best way to deep clean the floors in your home. There's no mess that the Shark Steam Mop can't handle, and it works on all types of floor surfaces. I love this thing. You can even try the Shark Steam Mop risk-free for 60 days, and if you don't love it, they'll send you your money back. Get yours today. Call 1-800-733-1106. That's 800-733-1106, or visit sharkhomecare.com.
Reason number 22 to switch to Geico. We think renters are cool. Now, we don't know if you were born cool or if it's just all the cool stuff you have in your apartment. The point is, if you want to protect your considerable coolness, ask Geico about renter's insurance. For as little as $12 a month, you can protect all the stuff you hold near and dear, including that combination flat-screen TV espresso machine. Now that is cool.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Have you noticed that the Saturday program lineup has changed at AM 620 KPOJ?
Yeah, it's exciting.
Now you can wake up with Bill Press at 6 and Stephanie Miller at 9.
From noon to 3, it's Ring of Fire.
Followed by 7 Days in America. At 4, it's the Peter B. Collins Show.
From 7 to 10, it's the one and only Lionel.
And rounding out the day is an encore performance of Ed Schultz.
Let's spend Saturdays together.
Yay! Online at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
If saving the environment and saving money are important to you, check out the new partially zero-emission Subarus at Car Subaru in Beaverton. Right now, we're offering ultra-green, partially zero-emission Subarus starting at 0% interest and rebates as high as $1,500 cash back. PZEV Edition Subarus are the ultimate in fuel efficiency with 90% cleaner emissions than most new vehicles. That's even lower than some hybrids. And right now, Car Subaru has a huge selection of PZEV models to choose from, all with Subaru's symmetrical all-wheel drive and all starting at 0% interest with rebates as high as $1,500 cash back. So save the environment and some money too at Car Subaru with the latest partially zero emission Subarus. All starting at 0% interest and rebates as high as $1,500 cash back. Car Subaru off Highway 217 on Canyon Road in Beaverton, where salaried salespeople see it your way. Think, feel, drive Subaru. Emissions data for PZEV Subarus taken from Subaru.com.
When identity theft occurs, it takes 3 years until your life is back to normal. 3 years of humiliation when you apply for a credit card, a new mortgage, or a loan. 3 years of rejection.
The second time it happened, we are about to close on our first home mortgage together. We are signing the papers, and suddenly our mortgage broker, who is a friend of ours, said that I couldn't be on the mortgage. I was so embarrassed and so devastated.
Don't let identity thieves take 3 years of your life. Lock down your identity before it's stolen with LifeLock and their $1 million total service guarantee. Try LifeLock free for 30 days. Take 2 minutes and call now. 1-800-900-9155 or visit LifeLock.com. Don't give up 3 years, 3 months, or even 3 minutes of your life to identity thieves. Take control. Lock down your good name at LifeLock.com. Try LifeLock free for 30 days when you call today. 1-800-900-9155. That's 1-800-900-9155 or visit LifeLock.com.
We inherited this business from our father.
Who got it from his father?
We needed an emergency preparedness plan in case of fire, cyber attack,
or anything.
So we went to Ready.gov and got free checklists, templates, and more to be prepared. Thanks to Ready.gov, we worry less about keeping Rizzo and Sons in business.
Only it should be Rizzo and grandsons.
And granddaughter.
Right.
Go to Ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199. Fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back on Monday. Don't you worry. If you want to find out more about me, check out RadioNation.org. That's the website for the radio show I do weekends here at Air America Radio. And you can also go to my website or the RadioNation.org website and sign up for my mailing list. A whole lot of interesting developments in the works. I'll be able to keep in touch with you if you sign up to receive my just very occasional, I think once a week, emails. That's LauraFlanders.com, LauraFlanders.com, or RadioNation.org. Check it out. Our next guest is Brett Morgan. He's an Academy Award-nominated producer and director. He's got lots of credits, including The Kid Stays in the Picture and the boxing doc, The Ropes, On the Ropes. He is out with a new film, Chicago 10, produced by Participant Productions. It's a film that brings together a whole lot of factors, animation, a documentary footage, some great music, and it tells the story of a time when, well, the U.S. was engaged in a miserable war abroad, the country was divided, the president's approval ratings were at an all-time low, the U.S. was, you could say, kind of lost, lacking direction, and the year ended in 8. Any parallels to today? You betcha. The movie's about 1968 and the Chicago conspiracy trial, sometimes called the Chicago 8 trial, that followed the protests outside the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Brett Morgan's joining us on the phone. Glad to have you with us. Give us your inspiration for the film, as if we needed any.
Well, you know, this is just one of the most amazing moments of the 1960s and one of the great sort of watershed moments. And 40 years removed, it seemed like it would be a great time to take a look back at it and do it in a way that's uniquely cinematic. And what we try to do with this film is really try to capture the energy and experience of Chicago in a way that I think only film is capable of doing.
Now, you do that in a very hybrid way. I love the mix of the animation, the sort of doc footage. What was your, I mean, you're describing the goal. What were the elements that you pulled together to achieve it?
Well, we had spent 4 years researching the subject and collecting media, and we ended up collecting, I think, 1,200 hours of film and 500 hours of audio and 14,000 pictures, because we wanted to do the story without a narrator and without talking head interviews. So we needed to sort of get our hands on every piece of media that existed so we can sort of build the script around it. And then we decided to animate the courtroom sequences with a voiceover cast of Hank Azaria, Mark Ruffalo, Liev Schreiber, Dylan Baker, Jeffrey Wright, and the late, great Roy Scheider as Judge Julius Hoffman.
Mm. The result is something that does build a mood. My only question, or one of my concerns, is it might build a mood that sort of contains this story in that moment of 68. How do we bring that consciousness into this moment, which is so comparable in so many ways, as you've laid out?
Well, I think the message of the film is it's about empowerment. And, you know, basically one of the things that the film tries to show you is that the theater or the riots or the events of Chicago ultimately came out of a meeting, if you will, between Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, and Paul Krasner on New Year's Eve. And it was three guys sitting around watching television, smoking a joint, and the next thing you know, they had changed the course of history. And that idea of just three, you know, two or three people getting together and deciding that they're going to take action into their own hands, I think is a really inspiring message. And the last thing you hear in the film is from Jerry Rubin, which is, you know, I'm not your daddy. I can't tell you what to do. Everyone needs to sort of figure out what to do. And ultimately what the movie does is I think puts up a mirror, or it does a couple of things. One of the things is it puts up a mirror to the viewer and sort of asks them, challenges them to ask themselves, how far are you willing to go? And we're not suggesting that people need to get their heads bashed in by the cops, you know, but I think it just makes you sort of, brings you back to that special place in time and sort of does it in a really sort of exciting and entertaining way.
Now, there is another Democratic convention in the works for this year, 2008. It'll be taking place in Denver. There is a group that is organizing protest again. They're calling it Recreate 68, I think. Is your film encouraging a recreation of the 68 scene this year?
Well, listen, I think everyone's got to decide for themselves what works best for them. We're not encouraging or discouraging. And I think, you know, one of the lessons of the film may be, and I leave this up for the audience's interpretation, but, you know, the protest, the street protest as they exist in the 60s, you know, proved, you know, somewhat ineffective in that the war continued on for, you know, another 7 years. And I think today, protest has gone viral, and there's a lot of different things people are doing to sort of change things. And, you know, one of the things I'm sure we've all been noticing is that when there are street protests today, the media is not covering it with the same intensity. But, you know, I've been going around speaking to, screening this film on college campuses all across the country, and I'm completely inspired by the level of engagement that this generation has with issues. And I think that this film is a wonderful sort of it's a type of history lesson I wish I would have had when I was in school. You know, it makes this story, I think, really sort of present and immediate and brings the past into focus in a way that we can draw a lot of inspiration from today.
Now, the 10 on trial in 68 included Abbie Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Tom Hayden, also the Black Panther, Bobby Seale. Missing from that picture in 68 were women. It's something that comes across pretty clearly in the book, I mean, in the film. What else has changed, do you think? So much has changed. Broad strokes, how has this picture changed between 68 and 2008?
Well, I mean, the obvious contextual issue being the draft, you know, obviously being a huge motivational factor in the protest of the 68 Democratic Convention. I mean, one of the other things I think we can look at when we see this film is how sort of charismatic and inspirational someone like Abbie Hoffman was, how smart and how what a sort of irreverent approach to politics, and his sense of humor, which came right out of the school of Lenny Bruce, was so refreshing at the time. And I think that, you know, some people in the moment in 68 might have, you know, Abbie was somewhat of a polarizing character, and as many people as he inspired at the time, he might have put off. But I think with 40 years distance, you know, you can really appreciate his intelligence, his commitment, and most importantly within the film, his comedy and his sense of humor, which I think we don't have anyone today who's sort of that inspirational, and it was that irreverent approach he brought to the proceedings.
Maybe that's one of the things that's changed in a way, though, that while in the 60s there were these leader-led movements, and the leaders became in themselves so important and so significant, such that, of course, the government had a huge interest in sending these people down. Sending them down would have sent down the leadership of a whole array of movements. The situation today seems somewhat different in the sense that so many of the sort of movements swirling to the left of the Democratic Party, whether it's the movement for a fair trade, the movement against the war, the movement for reconstruction of this country, they sort of don't have the same charismatic leadership that there was perhaps as epitomized in this Chicago 10 trial. But maybe they're in a way stronger for that because there are fewer targets to take out.
I totally agree.
But it would make less good drama, perhaps. It would make less good drama. Watching the reactions of audiences who've seen this film, it won the opening night award at Sundance. What are you seeing, and what are people getting from this, do you think?
The reaction we've had is extraordinary. You know, and it plays differently across generations. I think people who were remember these events, whether they were participants or viewed some of the images on television, have said that they've I've never seen these events reconstructed so fully. Tom Hayden, at the premiere, we were the opening night film at the Sundance Film Festival last year, and he came up to the stage. Someone asked him what he thought of the film, and Tom said, you know, I think what Brett has done here is capture the energy and the experience of that moment in a way that, we've never really seen before. So it works, I think, incredibly well, particularly, you know, the film is and this is sort of a controversial issue with the film. It's somewhat context-free. I wanted it to play as sort of a timeless tale, a fable for all times. And so what it does is it doesn't feel like a history lesson, and I think that's a great appeal to kids. We've screened this thing, as I said, over college campuses all over the country, and the response has been outstanding. I mean, it's been greeted with standing ovations pretty much everywhere we've gone with it. So I think that the one wonderful thing I think about this film that I really encourage, and it opens today in Boston, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles, and will be expanding in 2 weeks nationwide. But it's a wonderful film to take your kids to because they'll dig the music and the rhythms, and because they're not seeing interviews with people on screen, really instead of seeing their parents and grandparents. Parents depicted, it feels like they're looking at the brothers and sisters.
We're talking with Brett Morgan, who is the writer-director of the new film Chicago 10, that, as he said, is hitting screens near you this weekend. It's always important to show up for independent films or any kind of films on opening night weekend, because that's the weekend that gives the cinema networks, the cinema syndicates, the clue as to whether this is going to be a hit or not. Chicago 10, you can find out more about it at takepart.com/Chicago10. That's one of the criticisms you're getting, is that this isn't enough of a history lesson. Is there anything you would have liked to have added to the context?
No, absolutely not. You know, I mean, the people who have embraced the film and love it for the same reasons that people who are critical of the film have critiqued it. And what I find fascinating is the people who are critiquing it are the people who actually know all the context. And I think they're afraid that kids will not really know the bigger picture of things. But my feeling was, this is the way to get that story, do something that's uniquely cinematic. If you want to know the definitive history of Chicago, you should absolutely read a book.
Go read a book. Now, let me ask you end on a sobering note. The trial with Leonard Weinglass and Bill Kunstler up there was a hugely dramatic event in its time, and you capture it well in the film. Those two were heads of the Center for Constitutional Rights at the time. The Center for Constitutional Rights continues to be the number one defender of detainees in Guantanamo and the number one challenger of Bush administration post 9/11 policy, the passage of the Patriot Act, the end of habeas corpus. Those trials, those challenges are increasingly taking place today behind closed doors. We don't see images like we see in the Chicago 10 trial of Bobby Seale there, gagged and bound and handcuffed to his chair by the judge. That kind of image has been moved out of range of the cameras. Would a trial like the Chicago 10 trial ever happen today, do you think?
I don't think the government would ever be able to get away with indicting. I mean, some of these defendants, there's just no evidence whatsoever. And I think the media would probably scrutinize it a little more. But then again, you're right. I mean, look, the thing what they're doing today is they're just not telling us they're arresting people and detaining them, as you said, down in Guantanamo. So I'm not sure. But, you know, you got to remember, too, that this was a time before there were cameras in the courtroom. And so the defendants were forced to play out the trial, in the court of public opinion as it was presented on the nightly news.
Well, you put those cameras in the courtroom. I thank you, Brett Morgan. In Chicago 10, you'll get a lesson, but you'll get an entertaining evening, too. Check it out. Chicago 10 is hitting screens near yours now. I'm Laura Flanders. It's been great being with you. Tom will be back on Monday. Have a fabulous weekend. Stay smart, stay curious, and have fun.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.